Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Dr. Dane Marco Di Cesare, and I'm the Data Manager and Coordinator at the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. I'll be facilitating today's webinar, and I do have a few reminders for you. All upcoming professional development offerings are listed on our webpage at nysrti.org. A copy of today's PowerPoint will be available for you on the webpage. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's presentation, I will post a link to a brief evaluation. Dr. Ellison Boardman is an assistant research professor in the School of Education at the University of Colorado Boulder. There, she teaches courses on differentiating instruction and conducts research to improve students' reading comprehension and English language proficiency in general education settings. Welcome, Dr. Boardman.
Hello, and welcome to today's follow-up on our two collaborative strategic reading sessions that we had a few weeks ago across New York State. I'm happy to be here to follow up with you, and I'm hoping that you all will have some questions for me based on things you have tried in your class or things you've shared with people you work with. It looks like we have just a small group, but I'm still curious to know who's here. So if you wouldn't mind going to the poll, the first one is just asking about your role in the school. And if you could please complete that now, that would be terrific. Great, thank you. And then, so we've got some classroom teachers, reading or special ed, I'm not sure. And then, I don't know what the other is. If you wanted to use your chat session and put other, that would be helpful to me. And thank you also for putting in your grade levels. And if you don't want to put the what your other role is, oh good, Deborah's telling us. And then I think, and we've got mostly K-3, so that's interesting. So you may have some specific questions related to using comprehension strategies with younger students, and we can certainly talk about those today. And I think it would be fine to move the polls away, or maybe I move them away. Dana, oh, yeah, great, thank you. So this is an open question. I am interested to know what you have tried in your classroom related to CSR or other ideas from the PD that might have been generated on, over those 2 days. What questions do you have and what tips can I offer? And I am just giving you a reminder that at any time during the session today, you should feel free to type in your questions. But I'm going to pause at this time, and please take a minute, and any question that you have or a comment would be wonderful. So I'll give you just a couple of minutes to do that. Thank you. And I can see that people are still typing. I just have one question, so we can start with that one. But again, I really would encourage, I see that we have about 10 people in attendance, and it would be wonderful to hear some of your thoughts, because honestly, the goal of today's webinar is to think through problems of practice and to share ideas that you have been thinking through and to get a chance to ask me some questions. So Nancy has asked, while working with sixth graders in a special ed support lab, each section of an article was taking 40 minutes. How can I speed up the process? I think that's a really important question. And I think you might want to think about Nancy and others who are having this challenge in the beginning of things taking a long time, is maybe breaking down the process so that you're not trying to do both click and clunk and also get the chist at once. So you might just have a couple of days where you're just practicing with one strategy or the other. When you're using click and clunk, you may want to limit students in how many clunks they can go through and discuss. Another thing I think you want to think about is, what is it that's taking so long? So if I were you, I would either have you, or if you have another adult in your room, really observe that group work and try to figure out, is it taking a long time because the kids are not on task, and so it's hard for them to remember the process and to stick with it? Or is it taking a long time because they're having trouble thinking up ideas, and maybe there are some ways to scaffold the process a little bit more in the beginning and maybe even have a little bit more teacher involvement? So I would really try to think through as you're watching the students, what is it that seems to really be hanging them up? And is there a way to facilitate with some scaffolding and models and examples of those different pieces? And Nancy, if that didn't answer your question and you have more context you want to share, you should feel free to type it in right now. And I have Donna is saying she had introduced the click and clunk strategy for her AIS groups, and I'm hoping that's going well. And if you have any questions about it, let me know. And Ivy Dean, oh, it's great to see your name on there. She has been working with a seventh grade self-contained teacher. And again, if anyone wants to share any specifics about things that they have tried and what seems to be taking a lot of time or what seems to be working well, that would be great too. So I don't see anyone else typing. What I'm thinking I'm going to do as we move forward is, unless people have something very specific or even not specific that you would like me to hit on, because most of you are in settings with students with learning disabilities or at least reading difficulties, I thought I would go through and show you some of the resources that we have on the website that might help in this important scaffolding piece, particularly as kids are learning the process. So I'm going to go ahead with that, but as I'm talking through, I am going to intentionally try to leave some pauses so that you'll have a chance to ask questions that come up. And I think maybe one of our themes is, how do you sustain engagement for students when things are really taking a long time? And it may be that you need to model with the class, a whole class, even kind of doing it together for the first section, really thinking aloud and pointing out the different pieces. Then when the kids are in their groups, you want to make sure, first of all, that the sections are pretty short to get started with, and also that the students are using their roles well. So it could be that the kids are still really trying to understand the system for CSR, but to me, 40 minutes for one section seems a little bit long. I would say you would definitely want to get it down. I can't imagine that the kids are totally productive in getting it if it's taking that long. Now, I don't know what your reading is, so I'm not sure, but my guess is maybe you should be aiming to get it down more to like 15 or 20 minutes per section. All right, so here we are, just a reminder of the plan for strategic reading, that you're going to have a whole class preview. I'm hoping that many of you are starting to incorporate the preview and really remembering that we want to have kids immediately engaging with the text and the ideas right from the start and feeling successful and having that expectation that everybody has something to contribute in the brainstorm, everybody has some way to connect with the topic, and that everybody is going to share at least one idea that they wrote down. It could be in the beginning that you're doing the brainstorm in partners, and that's fine. And then eventually you might want to do it in a group that is with about 3 or 4 students. And then when they're reading, they're going to read a short section of text. Usually they're going to read it out loud. Everybody has a copy of the text. And then the students are going to stop and identify words that they don't know how to define in the meaning in terms of what they're reading. And they're going to use some fix-up strategies. They're also going to be asking each other, using all the resources available to them. They're human resources also. So does anybody know the meaning of this clunk? And then having a discussion about what they think it means, what it might mean, and putting it back in the text. Then they're going to get the gist. They're going to figure out, what is the big point of this section? How can I summarize what we just read in just about a sentence that's maybe 10 to 15 words? How can I figure out what's the most important who or what and the most important information? And they'll cycle through that with the different sections. And then they will go on to questions. And I'm going to answer Amber's question in 1 second. But in terms of the wrap-up, students will write questions and answers about what they just read, different kinds of questions. And then they're going to ask them and discuss them in their group. And then they're going to write a short wrap-up statement or review statement. So Amber's asking, when introducing the questions, which part of the wrap-up would you introduce and teach about each type of question first before you would have the students create and answer the questions? I think what I'm understanding you to say is, what's the best way or what suggestions do you have for introducing the question types, the leveled questions? And again, as I had mentioned before, you can use the QAR questions, which is what I showed you in the PD, but you don't have to. You could also use Bloom's taxonomy. You could use question starters. So would you teach the students what each question type meant? So what I would do is, there's a couple different ways you could do it. When introducing questions, so that I could have my class mostly focused on questions, I actually might, at that point, not do all the other pieces of CSR. I'm going to show you a couple different ways to do it. So I might read a text with students. We could call it the old-fashioned way. So kids are reading it, you know, in pairs with each other, or they're reading it with you. You know, I never really recommend round robin reading, but some way of the kids could all be whisper reading while you're reading it aloud. In some way, you're going to be reading the text. And then I would go one question type at a time. So the first questions that I would introduce to students are right there questions. And I would, you know, use your finger pointing just like I did, you know, and tell them what it is. A right there question is right there, the question and answer in the text. And then I would give them one or two examples from that text that you just read. And I would definitely, if you have the means, project it for them. So if you have a document camera, or if it's something you can insert into a PowerPoint, or with younger students, you could even write the text up on a big piece of chart paper, because when you're working on those question types, it's important for the kids to understand where the answers are found. So you're going to say, you know, today we're going to be talking about a special type of question. This is a right there question. It's usually a fact or, you know, a little piece of information from what you're reading. Here's what one looks like. Let me show you how it's right there in the text. Let's try another one. You might even look at a sentence or a couple of sentences from the text that you have just read and see if you can get the kids to transform that sentence or sentences into a question. Or you could say, you know, there's a lot of information here about how the Civil War started. I'm going to ask you to write a question starting with the word what related to, and then give them the topic. And if you go into the website, there are some materials for introducing the questions, but it really helps, I think, in the beginning to do one question type at a time before you put them all together. You can also, at that time, use the question starters from the flip books that you got. And there are question starters that are likely to lead to a write there question, though it doesn't work that way all the time. But you could highlight a couple of those question starters and say, using this question starter or question frame, try to come up with your own question. And then when you have three or four or five questions that are all similar, using that same question starter, then that's a place to keep talking about it. And then the next day, you can do think and search, or for a couple days, and then author and you, and then you can start to mix it up. Another way to do it, some people, when you go strategy by strategy, you just go all the way through to the strategy that you've learned. So if you've gone up through click and clunk, then you do your reading, you do the preview with the brainstorm, and then you move on to click and clunk. Then once you've gotten get the gist, you go all the way through get the gist, and when you're ready for questions, you do all the other parts first, and then you introduce the question that you're working on. The problem with that is sometimes it can be, as you know, the person said before, that it's taking a long time to get through the different sections. It could be that kids don't have quite so much energy if introducing a new strategy comes at the end of the lesson. So I'm hoping that that has helped you. And I'm looking to see if I have any other questions that I've missed. I don't see any, so if it's okay, I'm going to move on to a couple of suggestions for scaffolding the different aspects of CSR, and then you can tell me if you think this would save time, if time is an issue for you, and if it sparks any other questions, which I'm hoping it will, we can talk about that. So as all of you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can scaffold students' use of strategies, and you can certainly scaffold the process, as we were talking about earlier, by doing more modeling and thinking aloud. In the PD, we talked about the collaboration lesson and a couple of ideas for supporting students to work in cooperative groups. There's a lot of different ways to break down the process. One of those ways is by attending to the learning log that the students get. So the examples that I'm going to show you today are all from our online PD modules, and they're in the section that is called Teaching Students with Learning Difficulties. And these are specifically related to modifying the learning log. And what's nice about these scaffolds is these are things that you can do for your whole class, or you can vary the scaffolds. So kids can all be working on CSR. It's the same set of strategies. It's the same process, but they can be using different learning logs depending on what they need in terms of support. So here is an example. Oh, I guess I'm not giving you an example yet. So as I mentioned before, explicit instruction, modeling, and practice opportunities are key, and I'm going to show you the learning logs now. So here are some previews for scaffolds for preview. And if you look at the learning log, or the section of the learning log that's on your screen now, there's a couple things to think about. So first of all, you can see that there is a lot of the writing already filled in. So kids who are going to struggle with writing, it might take them a long time to write. It's hard for them to get to the actual work and thinking because they're spending so much time copying things off the board. Other students have trouble organizing where the information is found, so having a text plus a learning log plus having to look up at a screen to get more information can be tricky. So this one has quite a bit of information already filled in. So we've got the topic, ocean acidification, and the brainstorm question. What do you know about coral reefs? The way this one is set up is like a graphic organizer, and you would expect in this one that kids would probably be writing just a couple of words, one word or maybe two words, so they're not writing complete sentences, but they might be naming things that you can see in a coral reef. So they might put coral and fish, or they might have a fact that they know. Coral reefs are endangered. So that's a way for them to access the brainstorm activity through a slightly different way than just writing. On this one, the key vocabulary is already written in. I don't recommend this font. I think it's a little bit tricky for kids, but it is trying to give you the idea that this is something that is written in for students. And then the purpose is here. I will identify what is causing increased ocean acidification and list how it is threatening coral reefs after reading an article using CSR strategies. There is another feature here for students, which is highlighting or bolding key information. So here we want to provide some additional support to make the task more accessible, and we really want to get them to the key information as quickly as possible so we have completed part of the learning log, and in addition, we've highlighted some key information about the purpose. If you have any questions, let me know. Another idea, which, you know, in some ways seems so simple, and it's something that sometimes we forget to do. So here is another learning log, and I want to point out, too, that these the topics on these texts, global economics, the real cost of fashion, and the one before, acidification, these are big topics. They're high-level concepts. So what we're doing here is making the task more accessible to students, but we are not watering down the content that students are learning. But we are helping them to be able to process and take in the information. So again, we have the topic already printed out on the learning log and the brainstorm question, what do you know about how clothes are made? And here we have a word bank that might help students first think of some responses. Okay, yeah, I know sewing has something to do with how clothes are made, so maybe that sparks some ideas for me. It also is highlighting some words that the students will be seeing later in the text. So in this example, these four word bank words are words that are going to be present in the text. So we want kids to already be thinking and using these terms, and again, that's guiding them to the purpose. And here we have the key vocabulary definitions. Teacher would absolutely be doing more with these. So manufacture, made by a large company with a lot of workers, and this teacher chose to show a very short video. It's a little bit less than a minute that shows manufacturing. And then she compares it with the definition, and then she also guides the students to that word in their own text. And the purpose, read closely and use CSR strategies in order to identify the pros and cons of manufacturing clothes in developing countries versus the United States. To me, that purpose is a little bit wordy, but at any rate, that was what the teacher chose, and we might think about rewording that in a way that's a little bit more straightforward. And the main scaffold I'm pointing out here is to provide a word bank for the brainstorm. And if you have tried anything else, definitely please, feel free to share that with us. I think there are some other ones that, you know, you might use also. You could think about, I don't have a lot here about key vocabulary, but of course you can think of lots and lots of ways. So some teachers are putting pictures as of the key vocabulary definitions inside the learning log. That's one way to do it. Some people are using vocabulary sort of synonyms and antonyms. So here are some other words that are like this word, and here are examples that are unlike this word. There's lots of different ways to access the vocabulary. So you might just want to think about the things that you're using already. You just want to remember, when you're introducing that key vocabulary, you definitely want to have something other than your definition in words and in writing. So you want to show a picture. You might do a little demonstration. You might point to something in your classroom or show a very short video. But you want something that the kids can grab onto that is adding in one more mode than just talking or having it in writing. So let's think about some during reading scaffolds. And, you know, this might help to cut down on the time as the kids begin to get a little bit of support with the process. And, of course, the definition of a scaffold is you use it when you need it, and then you take it away as kids start to gain proficiency and understanding of what the strategy is. So in terms of clunks, there are a couple of different things I'm going to show you today. So on the top of this slide, you can see that there's actually some text that is on the cue card for the clunk expert. But we've put it on the learning log as a reminder, again, if kids are going to get confused between going back and forth with the cue card and the learning log. And then this way, everybody is going to have access to this information and not just the clunk expert. And Ivy Dean is saying, I hope you can email the PowerPoint. And absolutely, I can. And as I mentioned a few slides ago, you'll see on the PowerPoint is the section on the website where all of this is from. I tried hard to use the resources that were available. And you can download all of these learning logs and you can make your own. But there are a lot of examples in there. So on this one, you can see it says, does someone know what the clunk means? If yes, put the definition back in the sentence. So there's your cue that students must go back to the text and check to see if it makes sense. Does it make sense? So did we solve this just by having a conversation with one another? If not, or if we didn't know what it meant, then we're going to try the fix of strategies. And on this learning log, you can see 1, 2, 3, 4, which fix-up strategy helped you, or which fix-up strategies helped you. So this is a way to really engage the students in not just figuring out the word, what the word means, but that metacognitive work of how did we figure it out? Did we look within the word? Did we use a cognate in another language? Did we use context clues? So those are what I'm calling strategy cues to remind students how to use the strategy. This is a stronger scaffold, and it's not something that we want to do for a long time. But this is one where the teacher has chosen to select one or more words that are likely to be clunks for students, and in this case, to give them a hint of which strategy might help. So restoration has a lot of information within the word, so students might know what restore means, for example. And so it's telling the students, try strategy 3. And I think if I were to redo this one, I might use the word try rather than use. But the idea here is that you might, in the beginning at least, suggest if you have kids who are really struggling with either identifying clunks or knowing how to use the fix-up strategies, you can plant a few. And in fact, in one section, you might have one that you've given them and then ask them each to identify just one more and then to try the process. Here are some ideas for gist. So getting the gist, it's tricky business for a lot of students. So getting the gist, here we are giving students the most important who or what of the section. So you know that when students know how to use the gist, that's something that they're going to figure out on their own, and they're going to talk it through with their group mates. But in this case, we're going to start here for either one student or even one group or the whole class, depending on how kids are doing, and we're going to give them the most important who or what. So coral reefs are in danger. So that's the key big idea. The most important who or what is this notion of coral reefs that are in danger. And then some key ideas. Okay, and here we've got terms. So we've got some acid rain, carbon dioxide, and fossil fuels. And I think probably you all can gather that even if we haven't read this text, that these three terms are probably responsible for why the coral reefs are in danger. And then the students can take that to write out their gist. And you can see that the scaffold is there both in terms of giving them the most important who or what and the key terms. And then the teacher's job could be to go back and really say, do you agree? Why is this the most important who or what? Let's reread the section. Let's figure out what's going on. Let's look at these key ideas. Where are they coming from? How do we know they're important? So you can use this as a teaching tool, and you can also use it as a way to help facilitate student-led practice. In another case, this is just a variation of what you saw before. Here we have the gist, the importance of coral, so that's the most important who or what. But here we have ideas more than just terms. So we have coral that is providing shelter to sea life, and it's helping to fight disease. So these are terms that are just a little bit more expansive. And then again, same idea, students will use this information to write their gist statement, and you can also use it as a teaching tool. All right, so then we have some variations, and this is where I'm really hoping that all of you will get creative and that you'll really be thinking about what the needs are of your students. So as I mentioned in the beginning, when things are taking too long, I think it would be just fabulous for you, if possible, to be taking some detailed notes about what kids are doing, what they're saying, and where they are getting stuck. And in that way, you can analyze what is happening and then base the supports that you have on the pieces that are the most difficult for them. Another thing you could do if you really need to be active in the class in order to keep things going is to have an iPad or even your phone or a video camera and to film one group of students closely. Make sure you can hear what they're saying and hopefully even seeing their learning log. And from there, you can do that analysis of what is going on and what supports might I provide. All right, so a couple of other ideas in this top example. We have provided the most important who or what, factory fire in Bangladesh, but the key ideas are not yet there. So the students have been given the most important who or what, the kind of the topic of the section, and then they have to add in the key ideas. And then again, there's this cue, a strategy cue, my gist statement that combines the important ideas, leaves out details, and is about 10 words. And we have started the factory fire in Bangladesh, and then the students say what is most important about that. And this idea of starting with the most important who or what is a very great, it's a scaffold that many students will use for quite a long time. And we know from looking at lots and lots of gist statements that the more a student is able to start with the most important who or what, the more likely they are to have a complete sentence that is a high-quality gist. So it's a good way to kind of get going. I don't know how to start. Just start with that most important who or what. The next one, similar to what we did with the brainstorm section, is it's just giving a word bank. And you can bet that these terms, David and siblings and pranks, are probably words that will help students get to the key ideas. So it's not just giving them the words to write with, it's also kind of guiding them towards the key information. All right, so, you know, those are some that, mostly their discussions were too long. Okay, so in terms of how much time students are spending, one of the things that you can do, so that's not a bad problem. Having long discussions about text is probably the best problem you can have, and you can also listen in and try to limit students. So if things are really getting too long. So sometimes, and we're going back to this question of things taking a long time to get through each section, I think sometimes the kids spend too much time on clunks. They really get, adults do it too, they really get into finding the absolutely correct definition that's just perfect. They get in a big debate about whether it's this or that, and sometimes what they have are words that are close enough to support the meaning. So one of the things you may do as a teacher is to move students on to the next section. Another thing you can do is you can start to give them some time limits and then cue them to the time limits. So you can say, you have 5 minutes or 8 minutes to identify your clunks and to talk through your answers. And what you think those clunks might mean and put them back in the sentence. And then leaders, after 8 minutes, move your students on, move your group onto the gist. Another thing I think students do is they talk too much about the most important who or what, and really they start to compose their gists through a conversation. So you can also limit that part. And you can say you have 1 minute to decide on the most important who or what in your group. Ready? Go. And you give them that minute, and then you say, okay, no talking. Everybody writes their gist, and then you discuss it. So I think breaking down the discussions with a timer in the beginning can be very helpful. And then there are times if kids are really getting into the text, especially about the gist and what it means, and they're having productive discussions, you know, then as a teacher, you decide, is it more important for them to have a great discussion about this section of text or to move on to the next section? And I think that's a teacher decision. I can't answer it for you. Sometimes there's some really high-level questioning and discussion and connections that are going on. And sometimes kids are talking in circles and it's time to move on. All right, so then we've got some scaffolds going for before reading and during reading. And of course, this is after students have been introduced to the strategies and they're in that phase where they're practicing them. And the person who had the question about introducing question types, this hopefully a couple of the ones that I'm going to talk about now will be helpful to you. So for questions, in this case, the first suggestion is to predetermine the question type. And this can definitely be something that's individualized. So you could do different versions of a learning log for different students, or it could be a progression where, you know, in the beginning, kids are just writing, write their questions, or maybe they write one right there and one author in you. But in this case, the teacher is working really hard to get the kids to really write some great think and search questions. And so here, the teacher is giving sentence starters that the teacher knows are related to the types of think and search questions that might come from the text. So one of them is, who was blank and what did he do? And what changed as a result of blank? And so the students would be using those question stems, those in particular, to help generate the questions. And thank you, Amber, about the scaffolds. I think you're right, and I would love to, you know, get more and more and more scaffolds. So if anyone comes up with, and I mean this truly, so I really work in a co-design way with teachers, and if you come up with some scaffolds that we haven't thought of that you feel are really effective for your students, it would be great to just shoot me an email and say, here's what I tried, here's how it worked, and maybe even here's the activity that I did around it. So I appreciate that. And the other thing that, you know, that you can do in scaffolds is with scaffolding is really mess around with the group configuration. So sometimes kids might be doing some of this on their own and sometimes just in partners, and sometimes they're coming up with just together or questions together as they're learning. So I think that's helpful. So here we're providing some question starters and predetermining the question type. And I thought we had another. I'm going to go back. Looks like that was the only one for questions, but we will move on to review, and I have quite a few ideas for you in terms of review. So just as a reminder, the review is a statement. It's kind of, some teachers call it the super gist. So it is a gist over the entire text that you read for that day. So you could think about a text maybe being a page long or a couple of pages long, and the kids are having to come up with some kind of a summary statement that captures the most important ideas from the text. And as we saw in the video at the PD, it's not necessarily the most interesting, what you thought was the coolest thing in the text, but it's really what was most important. So on this one, we have the instructions, which are not listed on the regular learning log. So write a review statement containing the most important information from the passage in one or two sentences. Be ready to explain why you think this is the most important information. And I really would like to emphasize that even though the instructions are written here, we still want the leader, whose role it is to lead the review, to guide the group through this section. So just because the directions are here, it doesn't mean that that role and all of the discussion and everything else is not important. So here we have a word bank. So we know what those are for, just to key kids into ideas that were important to help with spelling and writing. And then also, of course, this is very small. You would make it bigger on your learning log, but there are lines for writing. So some kids just aren't ready to write in a blank box. And a lot of times we have to write on paper that has lines, and that's a nice skill for kids, and it can be helpful. Here we also have directions, but you can see on this one, we've got what I'm calling extended sentence starters. Ocean acidification is caused by blank. This threatens coral because blank. So we have two of the key ideas, the cause and the reason that it is important, and both of those are supported in this summary writing close activity. And it's not that kids are just putting one word, they're really completing the sentences. But this is a way to scaffold the process for kids who really are having trouble holding together all of the key ideas. Another idea is to provide some cues for what the students are going to be doing in the process. So this is a little bit different. So this one is saying, write a review statement containing the most important information from the passage. Then, highlight in the text the evidence that shows where your ideas came from. So here, these are students who are a little bit more independent. They can write the review statement, but what we're practicing is the skill of using evidence from the text. So sometimes once the kids write it down and get out of the text, it's hard for them to go back to the specific ideas that support their writing. And here, once they write their review statement, they're going to go back and highlight. You could also go the other direction where you first have students highlight and then they write their review statement. But sometimes I have had that backfire, at least for me, and then kids are just highlighting everything. So as a way to practice that skill, sometimes actually writing the review statement and then going back to highlighting can be helpful. And then they're ready for their discussion because they already know where the evidence is from the text. Another idea is one I think we may have talked about, and that is using the gist, so using the learning log as a way to prepare or practice summary writing. So this is giving students, really it's giving them a strategy for how to write a review statement or a review paragraph. So the first sentence is stating the topic of this passage in a complete sentence. The second is to just rewrite just one. So that's going to be whatever is most important for that first section. Then the next sentence is just two. The third section is just three. And then they create a conclusion sentence that connects to the purpose. And I think there's just a small typo in that first one. It should just say, state the topic of this passage in a complete sentence. So this is a way to really help students see that all of the work that they're doing through the reading process is helping support them to summarize what they learned And then it also reminds them, look at all this hard work you've already done. This is great. You've got a lot of good information about what's important in this text. Now we're going to put it together in a summary. And I think this might be my final suggestion, but for students who really may struggle with pulling out key ideas and writing a review statement, here is another idea. So you can provide the most important information and then have students arrange it in order. So basically, you have, in a way, written some gists or some key ideas that you know will fit together to make a summary statement. And then students have to piece them together. So in the example I have here, some bullying involves physical violence like hitting. Bullying is a form of violence that hurts people. The best way to stand up for bullying is to tell an adult when you see it happening. And on the other hand, some types of bullying are not physical, like name-calling, et cetera, et cetera. So you would give students like an envelope or a bag or something that has these different strips in them, and then they could work together to arrange them, and then that could be it. That's the summary. Or if you wanted, they could then write that into a paragraph, and they could make changes if they wanted when they were rewriting it to make it even a stronger summary. Another idea is to use these sentence strips, but you might also include some details and some important information, and then you could have students select which pieces of information they would like to include in their summary. And I think that's really nice, because this idea of getting kind of bogged down in the details, or even taking some details and figuring out how to summarize them into one idea, sometimes just having those manipulatives, having some strips on paper that you can work around, move around a little bit to think through, you know, and then read it, rehearse it. Does that sound right? No, I'm going to switch, you know, these two sentences. Oh, yeah, now that seems like the order that it was in. So there's a lot of different ways to think about how to scaffold the review. All right, and then I'm going to give you just a few ideas for fine-tuning strategy use, and then I'm going to ask for some more questions. Hopefully you've thought of a couple, and then I think Dane has a link to a survey that he's going to give you before we leave today. So as you're introducing the CSR strategies and students are practicing them, you may find that kids are starting to be better at some things than at other things. Or in the types of classes that you're in, you may realize that, you know, most kids really get it, but I've got two that are still struggling. How am I going to handle this? And we really don't want kids to stumble and bumble along on their own. So we want to be able to give just the right support that will help them participate in their group and use each other as resources. So in the on the website, there is a section that's called fine-tuning strategy use, fine-tune strategy use. And there are a couple of activities, and I'm just pointing to a few just to kind of let you know they're here and let you see what some options are. So for example, click and clunk. If you want to review the process, students will deepen understanding of the click and clunk strategy by reviewing the process and practicing in partners. So here you're going to review the four fix-up strategies. You're going to remind students about the cue cards. And if you're using the flip books, you're going to flip the students to the page that has the four fix-up strategies on them. You might have a little conversation about when they work and when kids have used them and when you've used them. So this is kind of highlighting and reinvigorating students to use fix-up strategies. Then students are going to work through a handout, and there are a couple of them in there, and they give you ideas of how you might make their own. And then I think the piece that's really key here is evaluating the definitions as a class. So you're going to review, you may not review every single one and go through the whole handout. That could be a little bit boring, but you could review some of them. So have students pick which one they want to talk about and have a group that has figured it out volunteer to share their thought process and then get some ideas from another group. Oh, you used fix-up strategy one. That's great. Oh, someone in your group or your partner already knew the word and you put it back in the sentence to make sure it makes sense. You know, those sorts of things. So the idea here is to just go a little bit deeper by revisiting the process. I think a clunk role play is not a bad idea when you're really trying to promote that collaboration in the group. So here, students will work collaboratively in CSR groups using a variety of fix-up strategies, and they're going to identify, discuss, and define clunks, and they're going to check the definition of the clunk to see if it makes sense by replacing the clunk with the definition in the sentence. So that's basically the strategy. Here we have students observe a click and clunk role play. So one student group will act out the role play, and then the students will discuss in their small groups. And those can be really fun. And again, I want to emphasize the importance of the reflection. I think this is, I already mentioned this in the beginning, so it's probably not bad to mention it in the end, but observing strategy use is really great for teachers. It's also great for students. And I think some people had already shown some of the videos to their students. And I would really look at the videos. I wouldn't just pick one out of the blue and show it to your kids. I would pick one that makes a point that you are trying to emphasize with your students so that you can really stay focused. So here you're going to watch a video with students. You're going to use perhaps a note catcher to identify student and teacher behaviors, what's happening in that video. And then based on that, you're going to set goals, and then you're going to practice, and then you're going to reflect. So it's not just you watch it, you see what happens, and then you move on. I think that setting goals, practicing, and reflecting is really important. And we did a study where we did this this series of steps with students. And one of the things we found is that certain students actually needed to be videoed. So they did the one and two, and then some kids just set goals and then they were ready to roll. But other kids, they set goals and then they practiced. And when they reflected, they hadn't really changed their behaviors. So we went back and videotaped those students and then showed them and did a personal reflection. Here's what you look like in the group. What's going well? What do you need to work on? And sometimes kids just need it to be even more tangible. A couple of notes on the bottom is that the note catchers are in the video library with some of the videos, and they also include answer keys. And I just mentioned about thinking about videotaping students. Here's an example of one of the note catchers. I think the most simple way is to have a T-chart, and you have student behaviors and teacher behaviors, or what do you see, what do you hear? Those kinds of things where you're just having to look at two different pieces of information in a video. But this one is slightly different, and it's asking specific questions. So it's saying, well, what materials do the students have on their desks? So this is for kids who seem to be getting a little sloppy and there's stuff everywhere and everybody's getting confused because there's books and backpacks. Here we're focusing on just the materials that are needed. What do these students appear to be doing? What do the students not, what are they not doing? How is the volume in the class? And can you tell any of the roles? And so you can see this is not a sheet I would give students, but as the teacher, this is also going to help you watch the video and know what to look for. So what materials are on the desk? The roll cards, learning log, reading, something to write with, and that's it. What are the kids not doing? I think the kids get into that. They're not goofing off. They're not talking to the other groups. They're not ignoring their group members. And they are not talking about topics that are not related to their reading. And then there's some examples of how you can tell that the kids are in certain roles. All right. So we have come to the end. I hope that you found some of these scaffolds to be helpful as you are thinking through the CSR process and trying things with your students. And none of these are unique to CSR, so any of these ideas you can think about in other ways that you're doing reading and writing and other activities in your classroom. What questions do you have? Does anyone have any questions from anything that I said or want to share some next steps? I see someone is typing, so I will wait. How often should the role play occur? I think that's a great question. And I think, you know, the role play is when you really need to emphasize the process. So if kids are having trouble in their groups, they just don't seem to be following the steps, they're, you know, not taking turns, whatever the problem is, I would really highlight that in the role play. And I think you could do it, you know, once a week even. But what you might do, you want to do it in for a very short amount of time. So it's, you know, figuring out one or two clunks in front of the class or just working on part of the gist. Because one of the things that happens with these role plays is, depending on how you do it, if you do it in a small group or with the whole class, it can be hard for everybody else to just watch. So you want to do it in small chunks. And you can also, Rebecca, if you want to do something that's a little bit more like a fishbowl where the kids are watching a group, is you could actually practice with that group. So have a group come in at lunch or pull them aside on one day and practice what it is that they're going to be modeling for the rest of the class. And then the next day you can have them do that in front so that they're a little bit more rehearsed. Okay, and Ivy Dean is saying, well, actually, let's finish with the role play. So, yes, I agree. The groups might feel more comfortable if they've had a chance to practice. I also think if you make these sorts of role plays part of your class, part of the culture, you know, this is something I do, is I highlight a group that's doing well or emphasize something that, you know, that I want everybody to see, then the kids are going to be more used to it and you can set up the norms. And Ivy Dean says she doesn't have questions, but she's thinking about the scaffolds. So I think that's great to keep breaking things down. And remember with scaffolds that once kids seem to get it, tell them, I think you're getting this, guys, and next time I'm not going to have this scaffold. And then there might be students who need the scaffold all year long. That's the way they engage with that strategy, and that's good too. So we want to really be so open and flexible that we can give kids just what they need, and if they're ready for more, great, and if what they're using is helpful and productive, then that's the way they do that strategy. I want to thank you all. If there are any questions, I am here to answer them. I think we have one person perhaps typing. And I don't have scheduled right now another webinar. That was the question. And I can certainly talk with Teresa. And I do want everyone to know I don't have my email on here, but I will make it available. And I'm quite open to people just feeling comfortable emailing me with any questions that they have. And, of course, sharing any scaffolds that you decide to use. So thanks so much.